Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi. And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 10th, 2017. I got it right, 2017. Mm-hmm. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Great, great. Glad to have you aboard. So, D.R., the swirling world of climate continues about us. There's news from various places that's come in this week. It's all going around and around. But let's start with a story about something called the hiatus, the global warming hiatus, which was created by the climate denier crowd by cleverly picking a very hot year and then claiming that subsequent to that very hot year, the temperature had not continued to increase for something like a decade. Mm-hmm. And they made much out of that, right? They invented the term hiatus. They said, oh, my goodness, climate change hasn't happened in 10 years. You must be blowing smoke as usual. It turns out that a federal organization, God bless the federal organizations that we have and hopefully will continue to have, made a publication this week that discussed the hiatus, right, DR? What did they say?
Yes.
And who were they?
Yes, it was a study by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration confirming that there is no such thing as a hiatus, that the whole nonsensical talking point that climate change magically stopped in 1998. NOAA went back, rechecked the numbers, checked everything, and turns out that yes, climate change has not magically stopped. There was no hiatus, and all the complaints and all the slurs from people like Congressman Lamar Smith were just insult and anti-science claptrap, basically, that there has never been any sort of pause.
Well, and I think the argument that they present is that the heat of the sun, that the ocean temperatures, the ocean surface temperatures continued to rise through this period and have been steadily rising. And it just for people who may not be so thoroughly versed in it, there's a big debate about, where the heat from the sun resides, because a lot of it goes into the ocean and it takes more heat to raise the temperature of the ocean, although all that heat's still stored there. And so these measurements basically say that the global temperatures continue to rise. I mean, the report that I heard talked about how the fact that this argument over a very short period of time from a geological scale, I mean, it's almost instantaneous, that it's very hard to unpick sort of standard weather randomness from the noise, but they are pretty confident now that the warming continued. Of course, 2014, 2015, and 2016, we now know, are all record-breaking years, each one hotter than the year before it. So if any of your friends say that global warming has stopped in the last 20 years, you can tell them definitively that it hasn't. Just be nice and say it hasn't.
Exactly. I should just clarify a misstatement that I made. It was not a NOAA study. It was an independent study done by the University of California, Berkeley, that looked at the data that NOAA had gathered and then confirmed that, did an analysis and then determined that NOAA was, in fact, correct, that there has never been a pause.
And, I it's very interesting because NOAA, N-O-A-A, was formed in the early 70s, I believe, under the Nixon administration. And that was about the same time that the EPA was formed. And it's very telling. The name is the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, right? So even in 1972, they recognized there was pollution and carbon pollution in the air that had to be monitored. And that somehow we've walked away from it. But there you go. Richard Nixon knew about climate change.
Exactly.
So there's that. I guess some of the more resistance laden. Well, first of all, let me talk about the bad news coming out of D.C. There's a blog from the Union of Concerned Scientists in which they point out that there are two bills that are pending before Congress that would basically give Congress the ability to reverse legislation, reverse regulation that places like the EPA puts up. It's just their bills. There are two bills, and they're called. The first is called the Regulations from the Executive in Need of Scrutiny Act, the REINS Act, as in reins, in reins on a horse, right? How Orwellian, right? Regulations from the Executive in Need of Scrutiny Act. That would basically force Congress to approve. What it says is to approve science-based safeguards within a narrow time frame. And if Congress failed to approve the EPA regulations, then they would not be allowed to go into effect. So I think the way that plays out is that if the EPA promulgates regulations like the Clean Power Plan, if Congress does not approve them within a 60-day period, they can't go into effect. Which is basically allowing Congress to kill any regulatory science-based regulation that it chooses to. And God knows they would choose to do that. It turns out they've been trying to pass this REINS Act for many years, but up until now, it would always get rejected. And now there's at least a reasonable path to being passed through these I can't even say the right words, these people that are now in charge. The other proposal is from, it's called the Midnight Rules Relief Act, the MRRA. And basically that would allow Congress to, as the article says, dismantle science-based safeguards. As to say, the Orwellian name suggests that Obama has put up a bunch of rules in the middle of the night when no one would notice, and now Congress righteously has to go in and change those. And it's just bad news. And these are things, if you want, call your congressman. Again, we'll put up the links, but I mean, you can go to whereDoIVoteMA.gov, or you can find out many websites, no matter what state you're in. Call up your congressman and say you want them to vote against the REINS Act. And it's just, there's something you can do. It's easy enough to call and just say, I don't want this, don't vote for it, and you're done.
Exactly, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see how members of the House Climate Solutions Caucus, the much ballyhooed caucus that was formed last year by Congressman Carlos Curbelo of Florida and Congressman Ted Deutch of Florida, how they will respond to these sort of efforts to sort of gut efforts to protect the environment, to protect the climate. It wasn't too thrilling to see two members of that Climate Solutions Caucus, including Representative Curbelo himself, cast a vote in that controversial vote to sort of destroy destroy the ethics office. So that may not be a good sign, but maybe things will improve from here.
I can only hope. I mean, just aside from the. Just a comment on the ethics thing where they passed it in the middle of the night and they got so much abuse from their constituents that the next day they reversed themselves. I guess it just goes to show you that those guys do listen to the telephone. If you call them up, you know, you get a response. And that is
something that the deniosaurs, to use our friend Betsy Rosenberg's phrase, they understand that, because remember how in 2009, they bombarded House and Senate offices saying, don't vote for cap and trade, reject Waxman-Markey. You know, turnabout is fair play. It always is.
And that's we'll mention it again, the Indivisible, if you Google Indivisible, .org, I guess, they have a guide where congressional staffers observed what the Tea Party did, and they recommend how, quote unquote, we do that now in the age of Trump, right? How to go in and make your views very clear to your congressman, right? Of course, I think they're much more polite than this sort of, ugliness that we saw in 2009, 2010. But yeah, I mean, And that's what Michael Moore said the other day. He said, find 10 friends that are of the same ilk, you know, have them on board. And when your congressman has a has an open house, go visit them and explain what you're concerned about, right?
Sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander.
So anyway, so there's that badness that's potentially happening in D.C., but there are good things happening around the country, DR.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because people give a care. Out in the blessed state of Washington, right? The state of Washington just rejected a permit for some sort of coal plant, DR.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me the story there.
Yes, it's a great sign of resistance by Washington State. Basically, I believe they rejected a permit for one of these sort of coal burning plants, and basically, this is going to be a local sign of resistance to the fossil fuel industry. Basically, say they're not going to sort of bully states around. It's very similar to I think something that we had previously discussed. What's going on in Boston with the effort to sort of force accountability out of the utilities. And and again, it's just a great sign to see that local grassroots effort, to go back to the Peter Sinclair line, local, vocal, and never back down.
In my impression was that thing out in the state of Washington was not just a coal plant, but also a export terminal.
Yes, I believe so.
Right. So I mean, and that's all by itself. That's a big deal, right? Because all these coal companies want to export the coal to China, which of course is cleverly building solar panels, but that's a whole other deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. That's a good thing. Another good thing is that out in the state of Oregon, so in the upper, shall we say, the upper left-hand corner of our country, good things are happening. In the state of Oregon, there is, you may remember, a court case brought by a bunch of high school kids who demand that the state of Oregon protect the air as a public trust, sort of like the taking care of the Grand Canyon or something. The government has a responsibility. The judge allowed that somewhat novel legal argument to go forward, and now it's my understanding that the potential new Secretary of State and current or recent CEO of Exxon is going to be called in to testify to depose himself in that trial, right, DR?
What's the story?
Tell me the real deal here.
They want to know what he knew and when he knew it from his long tenure at the head of ExxonMobil, and what he may have done to sort of stop federal action. The whole point of the lawsuit is that the government is not doing enough to reduce carbon pollution, and basically they want him to provide a deposition on January the 19th, one day before Donald Trump is sworn in, basically explaining, you know, his side of the story as to what Exxon has been doing all these decades.
Right. I mean, the case, the interesting thing about this case is called the public trust doctrine, is that as part of the legal proceedings, if you're going to claim the atmosphere is a public trust, you have to have a science-based discussion of why that is true and why that public trust has been abused. So it's kind of under that heading that they get to call in Rex Tillerson and ask him, you know, to try and document the obstructionism of Exxon over the decades, right, as part of the case that the government has not done its duty in protecting the public trust. So that's a good thing, right?
Definitely. So it'll be very interesting to see what he says under oath and what the consequences are of that, and what sort of impact his deposition will have on the trial.
So then the other good thing is that I guess it's breaking news even today that President Obama has set aside even more public lands up in Alaska.
It has been reported that the Bureau of Land Management has now issued four plans to shape, according to the Washington Post, the management of some 6 million publicly owned acres of Alaska's eastern interior, a remote area stretching from the Fairbanks to the Canada border, filled with rivers, streams, forests, and very few major roads. Chris Mooney of the Washington Post notes that this is, quote, one of many Obama-era conservation moves in Alaska. It is not clear whether some of the plan's more contentious measures, including lands available for mining, will stay in place due to the attitude, if you will, of the 45th president.
And it turns out that there's a move within Congress to try and make it easier to utilize public lands. You were saying before there's a bill or something that's trying to make it easier to extract fossil fuels from public lands.
Yes, this is a new effort that unfortunately didn't get a lot of attention, sadly, in terms of all the other controversies that have been going on this week. Basically, this was a GOP rules change that is going to essentially, as Think Progress notes, going to value public lands at zero and make it much, much easier to sell off national parks, national forests, and other public lands to essentially to private interests so they can sort of drill and frack and do whatever they please. It's the House approved the rules change by a vote of 234 to 193. And because it only applies to House rules, it is not subject to approval by the Senate and or presidential signature, according to Think Progress. It is effective immediately. Representative Rahul Grijalva of Arizona has been horrified by this. He says he called it, quote, outrageous and absurd. But basically, it just goes to show you that the goal of this Congress is basically to sort of, you know, sell everything and sell it.
Sell it cheap.
I mean, literally sell it cheap, sell it for nothing.
Well, so the piece of good news that we should end with is the following. Imagine yourself at a Minnesota Vikings football game. Game's exciting. It's halftime. You're sitting there with your hot dogs and beer, or whatever, your nachos and beer at U.S. Trust Stadium in Minneapolis, I guess. And you look up and you see little tiny people crawling in the rafters above the dome stadium, which, of course, is at room temperature in Minneapolis in January. But tell me, dear, what happened at the Vikings game this past week?
Yes, so two protesters were arrested for burglary and trespassing after they managed to scale the roof of the U.S. Bank Stadium in Minnesota and unfurl a large banner that says "Divest U.S. Bank Divest hashtag No DAPL," referring to the Dakota Access Pipeline. According to one report from NPR, they had climbing gear with them. There was nothing visible that prevented them from making it past security. They had season tickets, so there was no real way they could be stopped. And one of the protesters told a local media outlet in Minnesota that for all the speculation about how they pulled this off, that's less important than the fact that the Dakota Access Pipeline poses a risk, and that a U.S. bank should probably sort of bail out from investing in it.
So that's sort of this, Greenpeace-style nonviolent protest to unfurl a banner in the middle of a football game to make your point on national TV. God bless them. Good for them. That's a good thing.
They certainly scored a touchdown in the fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline.
So DR, just before we close, I want to remind everybody that there is lots of stuff that they can do if they are so interested, actually go out and meet other climate hawks, make a little noise, yell a little bit. It turns out that on this Wednesday, January 11th, in Cambridge, there will be a climate science debate. It's not a debate about climate science. It's a panel discussion about denialism in the age of Trump. And the people on the panel will be Bill McKibben, Dr. Gretchen Goldman, Tim DeChristopher of Civil Disobedience fame, Zaha Hirji of the Inside Climate News, and moderated by Wynn Stevenson. This would be a fantastic thing to see. What it says is free and open to the public at the First Parish Church in Cambridge. I would, if you can get there, it's like 7 o'clock at night. It's a great thing. But really, on January 21st, noontime Saturday, the day after Mr. Trump Putin gets into the White House, there will be a march in Boston in solidarity with the march in Washington, D.C. But this one will be right here in Boston, only a train ride away, which will stand for human rights, climate justice, racial justice, economic justice, reproductive justice, et cetera, et cetera. It'll be a great opportunity to get out and show the world how you feel about things, downtown Boston. Then on the 25th of January, there is the lobbying day at the State House. We'll put up the Mass Power Forward coalition, of which the Massachusetts Climate Action Network is part of, to try and lobby for clean energy. You get to meet your Congress, your state representative, your senator. You'll have help as to how to do the lobbying. no intimidation, no fear. It's fun. You should really try and make a point of doing it. And finally, way off in April, when the days are long and the air is warm again, April 29th down in Washington, D.C., on the 100th day of the new administration, there will be an enormous climate protest in Washington. So if you get a chance, you should think about going to that. That will be a blast. Right, DR?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So we'll put up links to all that stuff on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You, of course, can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. There's our podcast link plus lots of other interesting stuff. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Overcast or Podbean or SoundCloud or any other of several other directories. You can find us, of course, on iTunes. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.